Hi, I'm Allison.
And I'm Larissa. We're two working moms
and real-life friends
on the journey to improving our family's health.
We're digging through the facts and fads around living a cleaner, greener lifestyle
with plenty of cocktails.
Whether you've taken the plunge like Larissa
or just a little crunchy curious like Allison, this podcast's for you.
Welcome to the Crunchy Cocktail Hour.
Happy Friday, guys. This is Larissa, and as always, I'm here with Allison.
Hi, everyone. So today we wanted to talk a little bit about raising good eaters. And I think it's a topic we all kind of want to know about and want to talk about, because when you have a kid that only eats chicken nuggets, you get so frustrated.
For sure.
So some tips and tricks for raising a good eater that we've either used for our littler ones or we plan on using as they get older, or even just tips that we've heard from friends that have worked really well for their kids. So I wanted to share that with you.
Yeah. And I'm so curious to kind of hear your perspective where, you know, sometimes you get so frustrated with a picky eater that you just kind of like resort to whatever it is that they'll eat. But that's not your scenario because you've got so many allergens that you're working with. So I'm so curious about your perspective on it.
So a quick disclaimer, you know, some people might be listening to this sitting in a situation where they're so frustrated because their kids will eat like three things. So, you know, sometimes kids are just picky and it's, you're dealing with a more challenging situation or like maybe they're just going through a really picky phase. I know Claire goes through some of these stages. And so don't beat yourself up. And if these tips don't seem like something that you can implement, try little things at a time, but most likely they'll outgrow it. Like, I don't know many adults that only eat chicken nuggets.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing to note is that you and I come just from our own perspective and the things that we've tried and whether they've worked or haven't worked for us, but that doesn't mean that will or won't work for someone else or that this is the only thing that there is. But we just kind of want to bring you our experience and things that you could try if maybe you haven't thought of them.
Exactly.
So what are we drinking today?
So today we're going pretty fun and summery. I made a bit of a blackberry rosemary sparkler, we'll call it, because of course mine is still part of our mocktail series. And then I did a bit of a twist on it with vodka and champagne for yours.
Love it. Cheers.
Cheers.
So before we officially get into our topic, we wanted to make a little announcement. We've talked a little bit before on the podcast, just kind of very openly and honestly with everyone about kind of our struggles as full-time moms and full-time women in the corporate world and our ability to kind of put out quality content to all of you every week. So we've decided to give it a try to go every other week with our topics. I think that's going to give us the ability to feel really good about the content that we're putting out, feel like we can plan a little bit more. And I don't know, gain a little bit of sanity back, I feel like. So there will be an episode on June 1st. And then from June 1st forward, we'll be going every other week, same time on Fridays.
Yep. And I think one of the things we're excited about this is that it will give us that opportunity to do some things that we've been super excited about, but just haven't had the time. So we have a list of, I think, 7 guests we want to bring on.
Yes.
We have topics that will require a little bit more from a planning perspective and making sure that we can just work and interact with people that are listening. I know, you know, we get questions a lot and we always want to be able to respond to those. So just giving us that little bit of breathing room to make sure that we put out something that not only we're proud of, but is something that you want to listen to.
For sure. And, you know, it's not anything anybody has to remember. If you go into your podcast app, wherever it is that you listen and hit subscribe, the episodes will just come to you when they're available. But, you know, for your own personal FYI, right? If you're waiting for an episode and you don't see it there, it's because we've gone every other week.
Mm-hmm. And if you miss us, you can always find us on social media and you can ask us questions or, you know, post and we will, of course, respond.
We will be around. So let's get into it.
Yeah. So I thought we could kind of cover this in three different sections. So I think the first thing is food introduction. That was early, early days of introducing first foods. Then we have our really picky toddlers when things get a little bit more challenging and they have a lot of opinions about what goes on their plate. And then kind of our little kid, big kids and some tips that go around that. So for food introduction, I thought it'd just be interesting to kind of share how you did this with the twins, how you transitioned from breastfeeding to introducing foods and what that looked like for you.
Yeah. So the kids nursed till about 15 months. But then obviously ahead of that time, I would say right around 6 months, because I was big on making sure that they were introduced food as soon as they, you know, as soon as their stomachs and digestive system were ready for it. Because, you know, you hear a lot about kind of kids having an aversion to a different texture because they're so used to the milk and it's so liquidy. So right around 6 months, I had read a lot about baby led weaning, which is where you kind of introduce kind of softer foods or, you know, take vegetables to, you know, you cook them up so that they're in a softer form, but you don't give them pureed food in order to kind of introduce them to food in a texture that's realistic.
Yep.
So the very first food we gave the kids was banana and avocado, and the banana was first. Max immediately choked on it.
Oh, no.
And then Bill looked at me and said, baby led weaning is over.
Oh, no. Oh, so you did start with baby led weaning first.
That was my experience with baby led weaning.
Yeah, you have to get pretty comfortable with the difference between gagging and choking.
I was okay with it. He was not. So yeah. That was over. But what we did do is, and I happened to make all my own food. That was what I was comfortable with because I really wanted to know exactly what was going into my kids' food. And quite honestly, it's much more cost effective. And we can get into that in another episode if people are interested.
Yeah, if you're interested in actually making your own baby food, it is something both Larissa and I did. So we'd be happy to get into a topic on that.
But what I did was, you know, we did do the pureed food. I would make it ahead and all that kind of stuff. But I tried to pretty quickly start to vary the texture of the food. I stopped mushing it up as much and then slowly getting to kind of chunk size pieces rather than mush at all. And I found that really worked well for us.
Yeah. So really, really similar on my end. Started on at her 6 month birthday. She got her first food and I believe it was either sweet potato or it was avocado. I think it was sweet potato. And I did the same. So she introduced that. I didn't start with baby led weaning. I watched so many YouTube videos and the difference between the sounds of gagging versus choking because I was so terrified. So I did our own baby food. Actually, a lot of the containers that I used were suggestions from you. So maybe we can post some of those.
Sure.
And then the same thing. So I started with that like super, super smooth puree. And then slowly worked our way up to I just had a little mashing bowl. And that's what I would do for her foods. And then mashed less and less and less and less until she was really just comfortable picking up her food. And mostly just did fruits and vegetables until she turned one where we started to do more foods.
Yeah.
So I kept it very simple.
For sure. And I like it's interesting, too, because I mean, I think we did all the kind of normal fruits and vegetables and things like that. And we'll probably get into this a little bit more, but I found that given my cultural background and being Russian and the type of foods that we eat, I feel like we started my kids on foods that you normally maybe don't think of kids eating. Like my kids were eating salmon at before one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like so. And it's like food that they now love. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting. Like I feel like I have to think back to it. Like what other types of foods that for me don't seem abnormal, but probably do for others when I think about it.
It was similar for Claire. She had maple syrup really young.
Oh, yes. Just as a drink, right?
Yeah, just straight from the bottle.
From the bottle.
It was instead of milk. That's what I transitioned to.
We really push for our cultural stereotype.
We really do. We own it. Although I really like maple syrup. That's not even a lie. So getting into some of kind of our tips and tricks, you'll notice both Larissa and I, our first foods for our kids were not any kind of a cereal or grain. And that was really intentional choices, I think, on both of our behalf. You'll hear probably starting about 4 months for babies, you'll hear people start to say, you know, just put a little cereal in their milk. They'll sleep through the night. You'll hear it fills up their stomach, keeps them full longer. But it was a choice that didn't sit well with me. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience of why you didn't go that route?
Yeah. I mean, so I think that mothers in general were going that way because that was what pediatricians were recommending for a really long time. And I think you'll start to
including
find,
mine.
yours did. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, now you'll hear that less and less. Yes, putting cereal in kind of like something more substantial in your baby's bottle will satiate them for longer. I think the trouble is, based on kind of my thoughts and my research, is that their stomachs are really not ready for anything else but formula or milk mm-hmm. before 6 months old. And so I think that's really tough on their gut. I think in general, the studies that have been done now, and it's not even really studies, they're just facts. When you enrich flour in a way that makes the cereal, it essentially takes all the good stuff out and creates sugar.
It's just sugar.
And so like mm-hmm. envision taking a spoonful of sugar and feeding that to your baby, which is kind of like, you know, not what you want to do. Nobody's trying to ply their kids with sugar. And, you know, I think it's easy to reach for, because I think we know that breastfed babies need fed sooner, right? Mm-hmm. Even than formula fed babies, because it doesn't satiate them as long. And so I think it's really easy to reach for. But I am finding that both pediatricians and kind of moms these days are now kind of listening to what that means to feed your baby that, and choosing to, I guess, make it a little bit more difficult on themselves in exchange for kind of like what's good for the kind of health and gut mm-hmm. of their babies.
And you think about long term, you don't want your child eating a lot of those refined carbs and refined sugars anyway. You want them eating those fruits and vegetables. So it seemed logical to me that that's where you should start.
Yeah.
We did mention sort of the rice grains or grain cereal in bottles. I would say most anybody who's recommending that you feed your baby that to make them sleep at night, they are less likely to say to put it in the bottle, because it has now been shown to be a choking hazard. Mm-hmm. So you, if even if you decide to go the route of rice cereals or any kind of cereals for your child early on, don't put it in their bottle. It's just definitely a bit dangerous.
Yep, for sure.
So there are some foods that you should definitely avoid for the first 12 months. And the one that always surprised me was honey.
Yeah.
And I did. And so now Claire eats, I feed her local honey every day for the allergy benefits. But yeah, for the first 12 months, skip that. Anything that could represent a choking hazard. And so raw vegetables, things that could just kind of get stuck in their esophagus, popcorn, grapes, nuts. Refined grains is one that I include in my don't feed before
sure,
12
yeah.
list, or before the 12 months. I think this, like we said, this is something that a lot of people do. It's a lot of recommended, pediatricians are still recommending this on regularly, but I just skipped any kind of refined grains.
Refined grains are tough on our bellies as adults. So when your digestive system is kind of continuing to develop to kind of make that a first food, like, I don't know, maybe I sound like really preachy at this point, but, you know, I say think twice about that. And if it is important to you to give them some sort of grain, make it an oatmeal. Make it an oatmeal kind
a
of like, yeah, mm-hmm. like a whole wheat oat mashed with a little bit of your milk or with formula or with water. Make it something like that. If it's mm-hmm. important to you to kind of like satiate them longer, make it something that's just a little bit healthier than anything that is refined.
That makes sense. And for me, it was 6 months was kind of my mark for anything other than breast milk, but that's a personal choice.
For sure.
Another one is water until they're 6 months. You'll hear that one from the pediatrician. One that obviously is a big one for us is foods that family members are allergic to.
Yeah.
So for this next baby, we will have to watch what we feed her until she's 12 months, even if it's something that other kids would get. So bananas we'll probably have to wait for, any nuts. So it'll be interesting.
So what's the balance there? So I know that I have heard, And we did this a little bit with my kids a little as well, but we've heard like for some very common allergens, like don't necessarily wait till they're 6 months or mm-hmm. I'm sorry, 9 months or 12 months, like peanut butter and stuff. Like if you feel pretty confident that there's not an allergy there, give it to them a little bit sooner for fear that yeah. an allergy may develop. So I guess what's the balance that you take with kind of
having a
what
kid.
You're consuming yeah. when you're pregnant now, letting the new baby try new things that are potentially an allergen for Claire now?
So because there's an allergen in the family, we have to be more cautious. I think what we'll do is probably, I'm already in discussion with my allergist about what to do with baby number two, even though they have are not even born. We don't even know what allergies they could have, but we'll probably consult her on a pretty consistent basis on what to do with the new baby as well. But for the first, I think it's just almost, it's just being extra cautious and choosing to delay a little bit.
So will you give like many of those common allergens, or at least the allergens that Claire has, do you give them in an office, do you think, with the new baby?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think more and more people are doing that anyway, giving peanut butter for the first time in the parking lot.
I have a hypochondriac girlfriend who gave her, like, at least her first baby, all allergen food, like peanut butter and things like that, sitting outside of the hospital.
I don't blame her. I do. Having a kid with allergies, do not blame you, girlfriend.
She's going to be laughing when she hears this because I know she listens.
So another one, and this isn't a hard and fast rule. I think this is a Allison and Larissa personal rule, but fruit juices.
Oh, the juice.
So I would say definitely avoid these for the first 12 months. But we are choosing to avoid fruit juices altogether. The only juice she's ever had is prune juice, so heavily concentrated that it's ridiculous. And it's just one of those things where it doesn't seem necessary.
Yeah, because I think, you know, our kids are used to drinking like milk and water. And then when you get something like sweet in the mix, of course they want to have that. It makes total sense. I know, so we obviously avoided that for a long time. There was a point in their age where they got to a certain classroom at daycare where they started to serve that as a part of snack. Now, I send all my own snacks to school, but it was something that they would offer as a part of the drink. They would water it down. It was like half 100% fruit juice, half water. But I made it very clear when they got to that classroom that my kids are served water, or they're served kind of what I send with them. Mm-hmm. And actually, I want to say maybe about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, the daycare completely cut out the juice.
That's awesome.
Because I think, I don't know if it was a matter of kind of studies and things in the news that were coming out and the effects of sugar, or if it was enough families kind of saying like, I don't need that. And so don't spend school money on those types of things. But they just no longer do that. And it's more about water or whatever it is that you choose to send.
Yeah. And I think the thing you'll find is that if you don't ever, if you don't start your kid on juice, it's not something that they'll miss. So Claire drinks water or her hemp milk, and that's all she drinks.
And I want to be clear, too. My kids have had juice. It's one of those things that like a sweet, it's a special treat for them. If we go to a if we go to a birthday party, they will have juice there. Like, and I'm going to let them have it, because I also don't want to create a situation where they want something so much, it's like so forbidden that they kind of like go nuts over it. Yes. I want it to be accessible. I just don't want it to be the norm. I want it to be seen as a special treat.
And maybe that's a good caveat for everything that we're going through, is that I think from our perspective, it's everything in moderation.
And absolutely. So
you know, and we're avoiding fruit juice altogether when she gets a little bit older at the birthday party. Perfect example of an opportunity to kind of give that something special. And then she's not having that sugar every day. When she does, she's going to go crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good point. The goal is not perfection. I am not perfect. You are not perfect.
Wait, what?
What?
No, it's so
I'm
true.
Just kidding. I'm perfect. You know, and it's just about kind of what the norm is versus kind of either special treats or curiosity or not feeling different or like those types of things. But it's just more about kind of the healthy habit being what's more consistent than not.
Yeah, exactly. So the last one, and then we'll move on to a couple of tricks for introducing food. But too much salt, I think. It's really easy, especially when we cook for ourselves. We tend to oversalt, especially Larissa. She loves her salt.
I mean, I will just pour it into my hand
and eat it.
Allison watched me do it earlier.
I did. It's the weirdest thing you've ever seen.
But are you like totally desensitized from it now? Oh, yeah. Is it just like it doesn't bother me? You're like, oh, she's just eating salt again.
Picking salt up off the table and eating it.
I have low blood pressure. I'll use that excuse.
It's a reasonable excuse. But for our kids, they do not need that level of salt. So just being cognizant about how much salt you do put in their food, because too much salt can actually be incredibly toxic for babies.
Yeah. And but I will say kind of something on the other end is like, kids deserve flavor too, but at all ages. So let's not give them bland food.
No. So I think that's a good next tip, which is do not be afraid of your spice rack. So I think often when you see baby food, it's just purely whatever the vegetable is.
Have you ever tried like baby food out of a jar?
I think it's delicious.
You do?
Yes.
It tastes like nothing. It tastes like just schmush.
Well, see, even when I did make a lot of my own baby food when she was older, she wouldn't take pouches. And so sometimes for school, we'd get jars. And they had a couple that were awesome.
What, like the custard?
It was like black bean and butternut squash and cumin.
Okay. So they had spices. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They were good.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
And that's like kind of the foray she had into spices. But like Larissa said, there is absolutely no need to make their food bland.
Can we talk about how your baby likes spicy food?
My baby loves spicy food.
Your one-year-old baby.
Well, she's 1.5.
Okay, whatever.
So we kind of discovered this on accident. I've been giving her spices of some sort since she was really little. Like I said, she had cumin when she was 6 months.
Well, because you and Kyle are like fanatical for Indian food.
It is every
day. It's not even normal.
No, we'd eat it every single day.
You're like, pizza, put Indian spices on it.
We would. Is that bizarre? And so we knew we wanted her to enjoy some of the same food we did. And as long as it's not something that has a lot of spice, you can put it in your baby's food. So she would have cumin, garam masala. She would have, we put everything in our food. We'd make Moroccan food for her. And like, just you kind of start slow and work your way up. If you suddenly dump cumin in their food, they're going to be a little... overwhelmed. But when she was probably not that long ago, she really likes these chicken sausages that we get from Whole Foods. And we usually get her ones that are Italian red pepper, and they have a great flavor to them. They're really delicious, packed with flavor, but not spicy. They're just delicious. Well, one time we accidentally got her the hot pepper Italian sausage. And you know, we're cutting it up, giving it to her, and we noticed that she was eating it like the same way she normally did, but she was chugging water, just going crazy with her water. And we're like, what on earth is going on? So I tried one of her sausages, and they had some heat to them. They were not
she was
too
like
much heat.
Not complaining. She's happy as can be.
She loved them.
So funny.
So now we discovered that she likes a really packed with a flavor of food.
Now you know, even though that could have been a terrible parenting mistake.
It could have, but it wasn't. She loved it. So there you go. Yeah, so don't be afraid of your spice rack. Honestly, I think it's the best way to introduce babies to new flavors. So
for sure.
And start young. Start them young. And next one, even with little babies, so when you've got like 6 months to a year, set a schedule with defined routine for food. So both when they eat and when they're given snacks. I think what it's doing is setting them up for success later and avoiding that sort of constant snacking. And it also just lets them know that there's some routine and speciality around when you eat.
Yeah, for sure. I will say this has changed for we definitely used to do this, but this has changed for us a little as the kids have gotten older. So they're almost 5 now. And we do want the thing that we want to make about food is not like this is the only time you can have food. And mm-hmm. So you must eat it then, because we all know like sometimes you get to dinner and you're not that hungry, or sometimes you are like ravenous for whatever reason. Maybe you like ran around a lot that day. So we do have kind of our pantry stocked with things that we are comfortable with them eating at an eye level where they can reach. And that's so we do let them between meals or whenever they choose be able to kind of go and get things for themselves, because we never want to kind of dictate when they must eat.
Yeah. And what that does is allow them to respond to their own bodies.
For sure.
And realize that they are satiating a need rather than just eating, which I think
mean, sometimes, and it's a fine line, because I will say, right, like they come home from school and I think sometimes that can be a habit. It's like, I want a snack after school, right? And maybe they've had that snack and then they're not as hungry for dinner, which can be difficult because obviously there's no snack that they're getting from the pantry that's going to be as healthy as the dinner that we're making.
Although I've seen your kids snack. They were like, Mom, we're going to go to get a snack. And they came back with dried dates and cashews. So sure, Larissa, sure.
Okay, fair. But you know what I'm saying. Like sometimes they overfill up on the snacks and then they're not having as good of a dinner. But I kind of like let that roll off my back because I'm not concerned that one meal, that one dinner is like going to do something terrible to them.
That is such a good point. Absolutely. That's so funny. They're dried dates and cashews.
And then you were like, Claire can't have those dried bananas.
They had dried bananas and cashews. I was like, please don't bring those anywhere near Claire. Those will be very dangerous. Totally. But of course, they are wonderful with her. So next, our last kind of introducing food tip would be to talk to your kids as you're preparing their food and about what they're eating. You know, even just having that conversation as you put something on their plate saying, you know, I made you this. This is butternut squash. It's a vegetable. It is orange. Just like talk about the food. And not only will it be helpful for your baby just to like have that interaction, but it'll get you more comfortable with talking about food with your kids and make it more of a habit for you.
Yeah, for sure. Like one thing that we definitely do at dinner is, especially with vegetables and even with like different proteins or grains or whatever it is, like we'll say like, you know, carrots good for your eyes. Mm-hmm. And then like, I feel like we default, like if we don't really know what the vegetable is for, we're like, and it makes you strong. But they fall for it. So that's fine.
They're like, oh, I want to be strong.
Yeah. And we definitely like, you know, we play games with it. Like, I think the other thing around this is like, let them play with their food. Let them smell it. Let them like touch it with their hands. Let them do whatever they want to get comfortable with it. But like, I don't know. We definitely make like a game around it. Like, we'll, you know, they'll eat a piece of broccoli and be like, oh my God, you just got so much stronger. Show me your muscles. And like, they're totally into it.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of fun with it.
Because you make it fun and food should be fun.
For sure.
So moving out of kind of that introduction phase to feeding your toddler. Toddlers have more opinions.
They do.
They have so many opinions.
I thought it was just mine.
So one of the first things that happens when your baby transitions to that toddler phase is typically you're stopping breastfeeding. If not, you might have a longer breastfeeding journey, but you have to start transitioning to some other milk-like product. And so the first thing I'll say as a kid that has a dairy allergy is your toddler does not actually need dairy. So if you're not comfortable introducing dairy, have conversations with your pediatrician. I know there's so much more information out there about why you shouldn't have dairy. And so I think it's becoming more and more common for people to introduce other plant-based milks to their children. And there's other sources of calcium. So first off, I'd say if you're interested, we've tried pretty much every milk with Claire.
We also know which ones froth and which ones don't for coffees.
Yeah, right. So with Claire, we tried flax milk. We tried rice milk. We tried Ripple. That was a fail.
Because Larissa crushes her joy.
No. Ripple was a fail. That was the only milk she didn't like.
Oh, she didn't like
she
it.
She loved rice milk. She loved flax. She loved all of those. But we ended up with hemp milk.
Okay.
And hemp milk had a good amount of calcium. It has enough calories. And she loves it. It's a pretty thick milk. So we ended up diluting it at first with a little bit of flax. And now, excuse me. Now she's on board. She loves it. She drinks 2 full sippy cups a day. She loves it.
I feel like the calcium milk connection is literally the world's greatest marketing scheme.
It is. That or the amount of protein you need.
Yes, that too. That is a different conversation.
We should do a whole episode on that.
Totally. But yeah, like it's just obviously there are people who have dairy allergies. There's obviously people who do that by choice, but there's people who have dairy allergies and like they're not dying. They're okay. There are other sources. So,
and it just doesn't logically make sense that we drink the breast milk of another animal into adulthood.
We're the only species that drink kind of a mother's milk past infancy, and we are the only species that eat milk byproducts.
Yep. Not to say that they're not delicious. We are totally not going to downplay really how delicious cheese is. But anyway, your toddler doesn't need dairy. So if you choose not to go that route, there are so many ways to make sure your child gets enough calcium. Number one, calcium fortified food. So if you do a hemp milk or some other kind of non-dairy milk, you'll find it's fortified with calcium. Also, a lot of the non-dairy yogurts are as well. And they also, non-dairy yogurts also have the probiotic and sort of live cultures that you need. So those are awesome. We use a coconut milk for Claire.
So I do want to make like one little caveat, and I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast, but I'd really like to. You do have to be careful with things fortified, right? Mm-hmm. Because inevitably they're not, and I don't think a lot of people know this, is that there is a difference between kind of a natural vitamin and a synthetic vitamin. And typically the things that are fortified are a synthetic form of the vitamin, which sometimes can be more hazardous to your health than not having the vitamin at all. I think there's a balance, right? Like, I think as you grow and as you kind of, you do need calcium. Like, don't get us wrong. You need that. But I think there needs to be a healthy balance between kind of like what you pump into your body instead of, and making sure that it's kind of the right choice.
Larissa, are you trying to ruin my toddler's milk choice?
I don't know.
No, I'm not listening to it. Okay. Because she needs to grow.
Let's move on.
She needs to grow.
Let's move on. You're making the choice that's right for you.
I am 100%.
I'm just saying things. You can ignore them.
Guys, Larissa's wrong.
False.
No, but I think that would be an interesting thing to cover.
I think we should talk about it. I don't think people know.
No, I think
first, I'm going to have a one-on-one conversation with you.
No,
alone.
No, we're not. You're being kicked out after this.
then we'll talk about it with everyone else.
So, some other sources of calcium that are just 100% natural are sardines.
I love sardines,
and actually, I think you'd be surprised. I think a lot of people stray away from fish for their children, but give it a go. It's one of those things, and we'll touch on this a little bit. But
my kids, they've never had it. Love fish. My kids love any fish. They've had salmon and different kinds of white fish and shellfish and, you know, shrimp, like just like anything. They love it all.
Yes. Claire loves salmon. I don't think I've ever tried her on white fish. I will say that fish is one of the top 8 allergens. So it's one that you want to be careful with before a year. Just a heads up there.
Fair.
Other ones, edamame and tofu. Obviously, these are ones that don't work in our household because they're soy based. And again, consider waiting until after 12 months.
And try to get them as unrefined and unprocessed as possible.
Yes. but both excellent sources of calcium.
For sure.
Broccoli and broccoli raw. And this was one when I was meeting with the nutritionist for Claire. They were like, how is she getting her calcium? And I was like, she eats a head of broccoli every day. So this is it. I think the earlier you introduce broccoli, the better, because it's just such a great vegetable.
Broccoli tastes good.
It's my favorite.
It's so good. Broccoli and cauliflower is just so easy. They are kid friendly.
They are, for sure. And they're mini trees. What's not to love?
That's literally what we call them at the table. We like do that. Like we talked about playing like little games. We'd be like, don't eat my trees or whatever. And like the kids like gobble them up. It's adorable.
You sound super corny at your dinner table and I love it.
Whatever gets the healthy works. Stuff in their bellies. I love it.
So a few more leafy greens. A good way to get this in is in smoothies. Black-eyed peas. Claire loves beans, so black-eyed peas is one that we can add in a lot. White beans. Sesame seeds, a good thing to sprinkle on yogurts or even on if they're still having purees or enjoying purees as toddlers. Try sesame seeds on there. And butternut squash. Butternut squash is delicious. So all good sources of non-dairy calcium. Woo!
Love it.
So I think one of my biggest tips when it comes to toddlers is don't ever try something only once.
Yes, it's a really good one.
Toddlers do not really know what they like and their palate is evolving so quickly that if you try something once and then you put they just don't like that in your mind, then you won't try it again and you might miss an opportunity. So for example, I think there was something Claire didn't like off the bat. So I tried just cooking it a different way or mixing it with something and trying it in a different way until she discovered, oh, this isn't terrible. And so just keep trying, put it with favorite, cook it a different way, have discussions about why it's important. And I think eventually you'll find that they will try it, especially at the toddler phase, because they're pretty adventurous, at least with what they'll eat.
Yeah, I will tell you, it's interesting. So my daughter is like a mashed potato-aholic. Like, she will eat anything with mashed potatoes. But we found the first time we introduced her to like a potato in a different form, so like a potato wedge, she was like, I don't like it. We're like, it's a potato. And she's like, nope, it's not. So it's interesting that like sometimes they just don't realize it's the same thing cooked a different way, which goes back to like kind of like let them see it. And let them see it being made.
Yep.
But I'll tell you, one of my girlfriends, she kind of subscribed to the same method of kind of just like continue to put it on the plate. And she's got a 3-year-old who gobbles up kale. Like kale, right? It's not like, it's a very specific kind of flavor. And there's a lot of adults who don't like kale. But it was something that she kept putting on the plate. And eventually one day, just kind of like, she decided to try it. And then she was like, whoa, this tastes good. And now she loves it.
Yeah. And I honestly think that almost like not believing your kid if they say they don't like something, but not letting that be an absolute. Because, you know, even those really picky kids that we're talking about, it's likely not a matter of taste. It's a matter of opinion, you know, or a fear of, or a comfort in the known. And so just constantly putting it on their plate and seeing what happens. And so a lot of folks that I've talked to, obviously I'm still just dealing with a toddler, but a lot of my friends that I've talked to that have older kids have said they still do this, that they don't let their kid have an absolute dislike. And so it's something that's served and they can choose to ignore it on their plate or not, but it's not something that just won't be a staple in their home.
We read a book or maybe it was a cartoon, but it was Daniel Tiger. And so it was the whole thing. And the little rhyme in the story was, try a new food, it might taste good.
Oh, nice.
We constantly say it, which, you know, reinforces your statement about my corny dinner table. But like, we say it all the time.
Well, just wait till you get to my little kid, big kid recommendations, because there's a lot of corny ones. You might like them. So with toddlers, where possible, let your kids eat what you're eating. And I think a lot of people do this just naturally because their kids will snatch stuff off their plates. But it'll help later on so that you don't become a short order cook who's cooking like 4 different meals in your house.
I refuse.
Same. It just seems like a lot of work.
I will augment a meal. I will like take the spice out of it, or I will like, it's like just a really strong specific flavor, I will kind of like change it up, but it will still be the same meal.
Mm-hmm. It saves you time. It saves your sanity. And it helps your kid feel more comfortable eating a food because you're exhibiting that behavior.
For sure.
Other thing with toddlers is give them so much variety. I think it's easy to kind of settle into routines with food. And we obviously routine is important, but try new things. So if you have a kid that absolutely loves burgers, try a curried lamb burger with harissa or something like that. And try something that's a little bit different than something they already know.
And I'm really mean about this. So like I will give them something that they think is something else. like for example, like we sometimes have like seitan for, you know, and we're like, it's chicken, and they try it and they're eating it. And I'm like, guess what that is? It's not chicken.
And then do they stop eating it, or do they
No, because at that point
this is where their trust issues develop.
No, because I don't say it in like in a super creepy way like I just did, but I'll say like sometimes they won't even ask what it is. It looks like something that's familiar to them. They try it. They say it's good. And I say, guess what? That is XYZ. And they go like, oh, I like XYZ. And then they're just over it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just kind of, but you're right. Like making something look like something that they're familiar with gets them to try a different food. It's totally true.
Well, and you can say you like burgers. This is just a different type of burgers. And so you can try that. So that actually worked for Claire. We were doing, she had tried a burger, thought it was awesome. Kyle and I like our curry and we like our lamb because we like Indian and Mediterranean food. And so we tried her with curried lamb burger. We did a yogurt sauce on top. I think we wrapped it in naan, and we were like, fingers crossed, like wincing, can she please eat this? And she did. She ate the whole thing.
Love
so that. Worth a shot, if nothing else. Another thing with toddlers is that often they will gravitate to the thing on the plate that they're most familiar with. So what we try to do is offer the healthiest thing first, or the thing that we want them to eat the most of first. So we always offer veggies, and then we're finishing cooking everything else. And then we'll offer any kind of a carb or a protein.
Sneaky, sneaky.
It works, because if she's hungry, she's going to eat it.
Love it.
And then we talked about this a little bit, but I think it's probably more important for toddlers is I do have set eating times for Claire. And a big part of it is because we've set the routine that we only eat when we're in our chair. You know, there's just routines that we've kind of established.
She loves her chair. She's like, oh, it's food time.
I sit here now, you bring me food. And it works.
Give it to me.
But I think what that helps with is actually being hungry at mealtime. So when you're offering, and not that, like you said, offering those healthy snacks is great. I think there's a lot of value in that, especially if they're having things like fruits and vegetables in their snack time. But if they're getting their most nutritious food only at mealtime, you have to make sure that they even have an appetite. So that's why for me, avoiding that constant stacking and having that routine really works. So we've got a sponsor today. PrepDish is a healthy meal planning service where every week you get an email with a grocery list and prep ahead instructions so all of your meals are ready for the week. It really takes the guesswork out of what's for dinner.
How appropriate to be talking about PrepDish with today's topic. And it's funny because, you know, we came back from Lady Camp and I was thinking about how Bill and I wanted to get more plant-based and how things had been like so crazy. And we kind of got away from meal planning for a couple of weeks and we were just kind of like doing things on the fly, which makes everyone feel crazy and which like ends up having you eating meals that you really don't want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of like dawned on me. I'm like, I have this at the tip of my fingertips. Like, you know, I have these absolutely planned out meals for me. And, you know, it is so easy to convert these recipes to whatever you want, to your family's preferences, to kind of replace proteins with different things. My body has definitely decided it does not like dairy. And so it's really easy to kind of like remove that from the recipe. But for me, the biggest hurdle is the idea of what's for dinner. Mm-hmm. And that is there for me.
Agreed. And if I don't plan ahead and prep ahead, I end up eating garbage. And so this provides me with something that I can take a few hours in the weekend, prep ahead for the week. I've got my meals. I've already got something started in the fridge. So when I get home on a Wednesday evening and I'm feeling a little tired, I'm already halfway there.
Yeah.
And it takes that time out of it.
I'll also say, you know, I kind of move things around a little bit for my personal dietary plan, which I don't find to be very difficult, but the kind of most common things, if you're gluten-free or you're paleo, there's already meals for that. And I love the kind of that every week there's that 20-minute meal mm-hmm. for the days where you're just like, I'm losing my mind. Everybody just needs to eat. Let's do this really quick.
Yeah. And so you can get three things when you get PrepDish. You get grocery list, prep day list, and then a dish day list. And so you've got that. You can go to your own grocery store. You can purchase as you want. You can use coupons if you want and get all the ingredients that you need. And then you've got the couple of hours that you put towards your prep day. And then, like you said, that 20 minutes of cook time on dish day. It's awesome.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite things I will say is like the cleanup of the meals on dish day are the things that take the most amount of time. So when you do actually take the time to do like the couple of hours, I would say it's probably like 2 hours
mm-hmm.
On prep day. Maybe that's like Sunday for you. It happens to be Sunday for me. Like that's when you make the mess of your kitchen. You make all the sauces, you cut all the veggies and stuff. And so on dish day, you're like washing the pot and pan or whatever that you made the meal in. And it's just cleaner and it like saves some sanity.
And that's the biggest thing you need to save during the week because weeks
sure.
are already crazy. I love that it's really inventive, but healthy food. So one of the things that they had recently on our list was pumpkin seed crusted chicken. Which I love a good crispy chicken, but pumpkin seed crust, I mean, that's just super inventive and delicious. I mean, if it's Indian spices or pumpkin seed, I'm in.
She's in.
So PrepDish is giving our listeners a 2-week free trial. You can visit PrepDish.com/crunchy. PrepDish.com /CRUNCHY to try Prep Dish for 2 weeks. And it's 2 weeks of free prepped meals.
You guys, it's amazing. It's a no-brainer. And you can kind of see what the meals look like, what it feels like for you to kind of incorporate that into your weekly meal planning. And I guarantee it'll be something that you adopt.
Yep. So head over to prepdish.com/crunchy. So moving on to kind of little and big kids, and I've kind of lumped them because I think that these tips that I've heard, obviously I don't have little and big kids, but tips that I've kind of heard over time are applicable to both groups. So it's really the age when your kid can participate in mealtime and cooking and discussion of food. And it's maybe a little bit less about just making sure that they're growing as much as they need to. It's really about understanding how their body is fed by food. So there's a couple of tips. The first one, and I think this goes for us as adults as well, but planning ahead. Especially for kids, I think they like to be prepared for something. So if they look and they see, all right, Wednesday we're having meatloaf, but they know they don't love meatloaf, they can start mentally preparing themselves for meatloaf. Just having that, knowing what to expect, and then sticking to the plan. I think this is something we all struggle with.
It's especially important for kids and adults.
It really is.
Because I think especially for kid meals, I mean, we as adults can kind of like scrimp together whatever's in the fridge. But I think if you have to scrimp together for kids, you end up kind of leaning towards something that is unhealthier, that's quicker, right? Like you end up like mac and cheese in it,
mm-hmm.
or some noodle, or
ordering pizza.
The chicken finger is ordering pizza. So when you do have a plan, you just inevitably likely make a more healthier meal.
I agree. Another one, and we hear this one everywhere, but the importance of sitting down for a family meal. And you said that you have your super corny family meals.
We do. But like, let me be clear. We don't just sit down with them and then they just stay sitting. Let's be clear about what happens with 4 to 5 year olds. They see a shiny object and then they get up from the table and then they find a toy and then they start playing with it. And then they just like run away and you're just like, come back.
So mealtime, so not at all stressful.
It's aggravating. But like we've kind of started to say, you sit here until you're done eating. When you're done eating, you go. If you get up from the table, then I assume that you're done and I'm going to take your food.
And does that work?
It's starting to work.
Yeah.
Like they are still kids. And I do have to remember that like their attention spans are short. And they want to be entertained. So we have tried to kind of be even more engaging with them, more than just kind of the normal, like, how was your day? Tell me about this activity. Who did you play with today? What book did you read? Mm-hmm. Like, even more than that, but starting to talk about plans for the weekend or like just things that will engage them a little bit more. Sometimes we read at the table. Like, we try not to do, and I mean, we're guilty of it. Sometimes the TV is on or whatever, but most of the time we try to do something that's engaging to them. And if that's a book, I'll take it. That's fine.
Yeah. Or if you listen to our episode with Tammy Astorino, she recommended the Animal Game where you
take
turns.
It's really fun because I will tell you, even with the book, I'd rather be having a conversation with them because I think the most important thing, no matter what age you are, is to be conscious of the fact that you're eating. I think when you are super distracted, when your mind is very distracted, you don't realize how much you're eating and you don't realize that you're full. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be really in tune with the fact that like, this is a meal. This is to help like replenish your body of energy. And it doesn't mean clearing the plate. It means eating till you're full. And I think when you're super distracted, you don't feel or think about those things.
You mindlessly eat.
Totally.
Yeah. And mindful eating is really important. And so one of the recommendations I heard is to, during your mealtime, especially with little kids, is talking about the food that they're eating. And especially if you're starting to get the, it's green or things like that, you know, at saying, if they say something like that, having a conversation about, it is green. What other foods do we eat that are green? What is the texture of this food?
Absolutely.
Like getting into talking about the food in an interesting way. And maybe that's not going to make them eat it in the short term, but it might make them more interested in what it is.
Absolutely. It's a great thing to do. And similar to kind of what I was talking about with talking about like, what do these foods do for our bodies, and making them conscious of like, when I'm putting this in my body, it's giving me this benefit and that's really healthy for me.
Yeah.
Like, I think they hold on to those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's huge. So another thing that Larissa does with her kids is making snacks fun but healthy. So dried fruit is such a good option, and nuts if that's an option for your family. And then anything you can dip in something else, like carrots and hummus, apples and peanut butter, sun butter.
I only want to dip stuff in ketchup.
So much ketchup.
Oh, so much ketchup.
But anything you can dip is just like keeping those snacks healthy, but tailored to kids. I think that's pretty standard.
For sure.
So another one that I think is probably hard for most people is practicing what you preach. Your kids are watching, and if you're saying you need to eat this way to be healthy, and then you do the opposite of what you're saying, then, you know, you're speaking out of both sides of your mouth and your kid will respond more to what you do than what you say.
So when my husband eats a cookie for breakfast, that's not a good example.
Not a great example.
I will tell him that.
But it's something Kyle and
never
I
never told him that before.
Never once.
Never.
Kyle and I have to work on this because it's like it's one of those things where we'll be like, no, Claire can't eat that because that's unhealthy. And then we'll be like, let's have seven of them. And so especially now as she's super aware and just watching everything we do, I've got to let this one sink in. One that I think we've talked about this in another episode that I'm going to be really careful about is the way that I talk about food. I think as adults and especially as women, we can talk really negatively about the effect food has on our body. So we'll say things like, you know, if you went for a run or a walk, you'd be like, oh, I really earned this dinner. Say things like, ugh, I can't believe I just ate that. Or I'm starving even, or I just feel fat. And that kind of food and body negativity will just seep into our kids. And it's so hard not to do. But it's trying to create that healthy relationship with food. And especially, I mean, with little girls and eating disorders and just anything you can do to just have them have a positive relationship and understanding of what food does for their bodies.
For sure.
All right. This is one I know you do.
Hmm.
Growing a garden with your kids and then having them cook what they grow.
Yeah. I think this works wonders for us. When the kids know that they're eating something that's come from the garden and that they were a part of it, they feel super excited about it. When, you know, we've made a dinner together, so my son is a lot less picky than my daughter. He's just more apt to try new foods. Mm-hmm. She's not so much picky, but she's afraid of new foods and takes like a little bit more cajoling with her. But when she's made it, even if it's new for her, she somehow is just kind of like, I made this. Of course it tastes good.
Oh, and there's so the pride.
She's more likely to try it. So I'm telling you, Bill and I were just talking about this because the one thing that we can't get her off of is cow's milk.
But is Max off of it?
He's not off of it. But I know he doesn't really care. I can give him a different milk and he won't care. They already drank, like when they have chocolate milk, they drink an almond chocolate milk and they don't know the difference. We've tried to sneak other milk in and I've tried to have like a milk tasting and she was like, no, I know which milk is the right milk. So we're actually headed out to my in-laws for the weekend. I have a request to bring my homemade cashew milk. So I have plans to make it with her tonight because it's so super easy. And I'm hoping that she will try it and I'm hoping that she will like it. I said to Bill, I'm like, what if I just tell her they don't make cow's milk anymore? And he's like, that's not going to work.
Maybe avoid lying. Just give it a shot.
I mean, but I am trying to find a way. Like, I do see that when I make food with her, she's more apt to try it, even if it is new. And I'm wondering if I make the milk with her, if she'll try this milk and we can maybe like slowly get there.
It's worth a shot, if nothing else.
Totally. So
that's fun.
But I do find like when your kids have a hand in it, they're proud.
Mm-hmm.
And they like want other people to try it and they want to try it. And like, I feel like even if they don't like it, they pretend they do.
Yes. Yeah, well, absolutely. Because it's their product.
Totally.
Well, there's a couple more tips that have to do with that when we get to some later pieces here. So we also talked about making the meal fun, but the food itself can be made really fun. So take them to the bar, the taco bar, the salad bar, pizza bar, set it up on your table. They sprinkle it themselves. I think kids love doing that. I think the biggest challenge you run into, though, is that you'll put out all of these fresh veggies for them to put on their pizza. And they're like, pepperoni and cheese.
Right.
So I'm not saying that that's a perfect science, but it's an option to have them take a small hand in cooking. Another one, again, that I know that you do is both finger foods and picnics.
Yeah. So every Friday night is our movie night. And with movie night comes what we call snack dinner. Mm-hmm. And so we have kind of a large tray that has like a ton of compartments. So in the middle compartment is usually always hummus. And then kind of different things go around the tray. So it'll be things like cucumbers, apple slices. There'll be like Triscuits or some kind of cracker to dip in the hummus along with the veggies. There'll be fruits of some sort, grapes or watermelon or whatever. But just like a plethora of things. And I mean, don't get me wrong. My kids love salami. Okay.
Oh, really?
So like they get sliced salami in that, but like I'm okay with that because the majority of the other things, which I know they will also pick at too, are fine.
Yeah.
So if those couple slices of salami make them happy, have at it.
Yeah. It's balance.
Have at it.
And then something that I saw a colleague did with her kids was cooking around the world. And so bringing in and sharing with them about a place in the world and then talking about the culture, maybe bringing in some things from that culture and then cooking the food and getting them excited about learning about it with the food. I've seen that be really successful, and you can have a themed night. Like let's go to the Great Wall of China and we'll make a fried rice, something that it just makes it super fun and you can get your kids involved. Have you tried this?
I don't think we've ever kind of focused things from a cultural perspective, but like as they get older, I could really see us doing that.
Can you take them to India so they can have Indian food with me and Kyle?
No, I'll just bring them to your house.
Perfect.
Odds are you're having an Indian dish.
Most likely, yes. All right. So another one, I actually had a discussion with a group of colleagues and I got some great tips on things to do with older kids. And one of the things my colleague had done with hers is that there was no ordering off the kids' menu. So at any time they went out to eat, the kids' menu was off limits. And her reasoning here is that they were typically going to maybe a sushi restaurant, or they were going to an Italian restaurant, or they were going to these places that had different world cuisine. And then their kids were having chicken nuggets.
Yeah. So I will say we do a mix of this. Mm-hmm. We certainly go places where like that day they want chicken fingers, and that's okay by me once in a while. And then there are certain places that we go to where we like slap together a bunch of appetizers, and it'll be things like hummus or like some kind of veggie something, or, you know, like we kind of like piece together the things that we know that they'll like. But I also will say that like when we do go to a restaurant and we order off the kids menu and it's like a chicken finger type of thing, instead of the fries side, they'll end up with a broccoli side or like the applesauce side instead of the ice cream. Cause like,
yeah,
I don't know if you've noticed, like if you've looked at the kids' meals, but it's like the crappy meal plus an ice cream and a soda.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no,
none of those things. Thank you.
And I will also tell you, and maybe this is a product of my kids still having kind of little bellies, but every time I order a kid's meal, I order one because the size of the kid's meal that comes is for an adult.
Oh, really?
I never order two.
Oh, wow.
I order one and I get two plates and I split it between them because the size of the meals in the United States are insane.
Just large.
Totally large.
Well, I really liked this one. I don't know. Obviously, eating out at a restaurant anytime with Claire is going to be a bit of a challenge, and the kids' menu will almost never work. So we'll probably have to have her off of the...
I think we're still waiting for the day that she eats off the menu, period, right?
Oh, yeah. I still have not taken her to a restaurant. And I have...
Do you have something in mind? Like, you're going to try this? You're going to do it?
No.
At some point, they're going to be like, ma'am, please take your outside food out.
I know.
Here.
Eventually, it's going to be an issue, especially as she gets like a little bit older and they're like, we have a kids menu. It'll be more difficult. I think there are more and more places that are super allergy friendly, or like a vegan restaurant would probably be a really good option for her, but soy. So I don't know, but I did like this tip that they're kind of banning the kids menu and asking them to expand their palates and look at other things. I thought that was fun.
But I will also like to the credit of restaurants, like I think depending on where you go, if you're going to a place that's kind of more of a scratch kitchen or more farm to table, their kids options have like they have the crepe stuff, sure, because they know that that's kid friendly. But a lot of them will have a healthier dish, which is really just nice to see.
But I think we're like from the adventure eater perspective is more where this is coming from rather than the healthy side to say like there shouldn't be adult food and kid food. There's food.
It's absolutely
and
fair.
So I think that's more where she's coming from with this, that it's the kids menus, the stuff that is boring. You're at a place with great food.
I think I come from at it from a portion price perspective.
Yeah, that too.
Because the kids portion is enormous, yes, and it's half the price of a regular entree, which is why I usually say like, most of the time when I do order not off the kids menu, it's usually kind of a smattering of appetizers rather than getting an adult meal, because literally that will feed them for 4 months.
Yeah, your price is going to go up if your kid's ordering like the chicken a la king.
Well, I don't even know what that is.
I don't actually either. It's in a book I read to Claire, so now it's just in my head. All right, one I know that I'm going to do with Claire because I think this is so wonderful, but it's the thank you bite. Some people call it the courtesy bite or, you know, something like that. But essentially, when, especially as a mom or a dad, you are putting the time and effort and love into making a meal for your kid. And when you're, and picky moms are sitting there going, yup. But, you know, you're serving this to your kid and they're like, ew, I don't like it. You know, it's the worst. It hurts. Oh, you just want to throw the food against the wall.
Toddlers are really good at hurting your feelings.
Oh, they are. Yeah, they are.
They don't even know it.
Oh, little side note. Kyle once took like I think it was when we first tried her with Lamburger. She wasn't eating it right way. He was so excited trying to get her these burgers. And then at first she did the and he was devastated. And I was like, it's okay. She'll come around. And she did. But it was so, you should have seen
him. My 1-year-old hurt my feelings.
He was devastated.
She raspberried me.
It's her favorite thing to do. But this, I think this probably goes for bigger kids. But it's, you know, wherever you are, somebody's putting the time and the effort into your food. And so it's taking that one bite, not as a, you have to have one bite of your food, but as to say, I see that you did this for me and I appreciate it and thank you. And then you can choose to forego the rest of the meal if it's not your thing, but just to a thank you bite.
So I guess like this is for an older kid to be able to explain something like that.
Yes. So okay. I think this would be an older kid. But it goes for, you know, if you're over at somebody's house or with grandparents that are cooking meals, it has that extra little bit of courtesy.
But like not if you have an allergy.
Not if you have an allergy. I'd be like, oh, they made your food, but you can't eat it. Just take one bite.
Just thank you, anaphylaxis. Yes.
Oh, God. No, okay. We won't be doing that if that's what happens. So we talked about this a little bit, but getting them shopping and cooking. And I have two recommendations that I heard from folks that I think are awesome. One is a new food day of the week. So you could say like new food Friday or new food Saturday. And the entire family has to try something new, but you alternate the kid that gets to pick it. And so they can say, I want to try this. And then you get them involved in finding recipes, helping to cook it. And then they can all be excited about it. And everybody has to try it. And you can hate it, you can love it, but everybody tries it. And the woman who shared this tip with me says that they've had new staples that they've developed as a part of this process.
So how old are her kids?
Probably in the like 6 to 10 range.
Okay. Like, so this one's interesting to me. I love the concept and I could tell you I'll never do it because I know what it takes to already kind of like plan the week and to add another dimension of planning the week.
Yeah.
Feels so overwhelming. And so like I could maybe see it when your kids are significantly older, much more independent and much more like a part of the process. 6 to 8 seems like young for me.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just kind of in the stage of life I am. Like, I love the concept. I wonder if I could ever put it into practice.
Maybe you could do a once a month thing.
Maybe. Yeah. No, that's a fair point.
But I like the idea because it's the kids saying, this is something new. We've never had it. Let's give it a go. And so they're involved in the process.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing I heard was something called the Weird Ingredient Challenge. And this would probably be older kids as well.
For sure.
So you go to the grocery store and your kid gets to pick out one ingredient that looks super weird. They've never had it. It could be a dragon fruit or a fish they've never had that maybe has the head on. And then that kid needs to help come up with the recipe to cook it. You cook it together and everyone has to have at least one bite.
Interesting. I feel like I just like do this with myself as an adult when I like came home with those.
Those mushrooms. Like,
those fuzzy mushrooms.
Yeah.
So good.
But it was fun, right?
Yeah.
Because you had to, you were like, ooh, this looks interesting. Let's figure out a way to make it taste delicious.
Yeah. Even though my husband's standing next to me, like utterly disgusted, does not like mushrooms. So he certainly doesn't want a mushroom that looks like a stuffed animal.
That's but, fair. I'm with Bill on that one.
I mean, I enjoyed it.
But it's another one you could do is like a chop challenge where, you have one ingredient and then each kid has to come up with a recipe for it over the course of the week. Number one, you get to reuse ingredients. Number two, they get really involved in the cooking and it just makes it into heck. If everything's a challenge, kids are going to be more into it and getting them involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one just last plug from our episode with Tammy, because she had some fantastic recommendations. So we'll link to that episode. But she just had this simple, simple mantra she used with her kids. And it's eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full.
It's so simple.
So simple.
And but it's not easy.
Nope.
But our minds are racing. We're constantly doing different things. Like I think as parents, like I find myself, I've gotten better at this as my kids have gotten older, but like you just eat fast because you're like mm-hmm. on to the next thing. But then you don't realize when you're full because it's like, you know, you finished your plate and you're like, I ate too much.
Yeah.
I should have stopped halfway through.
I feel terrible now. Mm-hmm. But it like we've talked about a couple of times, it's getting children familiar with what full feels like, getting them familiar with what hunger feels like and understanding their own bodies and the needs that it has. And it helps kind of avoid that fight where you start to say, all right, just two more bites. But it's, you know, I think when this is again, older children who can respond to their own bodies in this way. But it just, I see so much value in instilling this in children.
I will say one thing to kind of your comment about like the, just take two more bites or whatever. And you know, if I'm quite honest, like we're not above that because there is days where like I've looked at their daycare report and I know that they didn't have a good lunch and like I know that they need to eat, but they like want to go off and play.
Well, then you just send them to Basha's and she puts them in front of the TV with food.
just eat.
And sorry, but little background there. Yeah. Basha is Larissa's mom.
Yes.
There you go.
But I will say this, like one thing that we always try to do is, you know, usually they kind of have like not like a compartmented plate, but like there's parts to their mm-hmm. meal. There's like a veggie part and maybe there's a fish or a grain or whatever it is. Our rule is kind of you will try one bite of everything on your plate. If you don't like it, that's cool. If you are full after that, that's cool too. But you will try each and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not above bribery. If there is a new food on their plate, and again, my son is much more apt to try new things. My daughter is not. I'm not above saying, try a bite of that. And if you try it, I will give you a small treat after dinner. And like my small treat is like my poor kids, like three chocolate chips, but like they'll go for it and it gets them to try it. And I am okay with that. And sometimes they try it and they go like, I hate it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they try it and then they finish it. And so for me, that is totally 100% worth it. They also don't know that my chocolate chips are like vegan and healthy, like made of beans or whatever they're made of.
Okay, if your chocolate chips aren't even made out of chocolate, we have some discussion. I'm going to call child services on you.
Well, they're vegan for sure.
Well, so are mine, but.
Okay.
Are they made of chocolate?
I don't know. They're made of chocolate. They're probably made of like a super dark chocolate.
Okay, fair.
But. But I am like a proponent of, you must try everything on your plate. Maybe that goes a little bit mm-hmm. to your kind of thank you bite type of thing, but like you will at least try it. You don't have to like it. You don't have to eat it, but you will try it yeah. before you get up from the table.
Yeah, I think it's just another way of saying the thank you bite because it's you put yeah. the time and effort in.
And bribe them if you need to.
And bribe them if That's you need fine. To. I think it's just doing what works for you. But I think nobody wants to be in a situation where they feel like they are just battling at dinner.
No.
Nobody wants to be there.
I feel like I want to say something like after we've talked about like all these things that we've tried and we've had success with some and not with mm-hmm. others, and we kind of take our own spin on each one of these tips. But like I also want to say, I feel like when I read like articles about, and I certainly read books and I read articles and I read things about like how to make your kids healthy eaters and not picky eaters and whatever. And I think we alluded this to this in the beginning too, is like sometimes your kid is just a picky eater. Yeah. Sometimes it has nothing to do with what you're doing.
Sometimes it has to do with developmental stages.
For sure. Sometimes you will try all of these things mm-hmm. and nothing work. And I struggle with some of the advice that's sometimes given because it doesn't help your kids eat better, but it does make you feel like crap about yes. yourself as a parent. And then you feel this like pressure of like, I'm just going to feed them anything because they're starving and they need to eat and mm-hmm. and all these things. And I think I just feel the need to say like, what you're doing is okay. Everything doesn't need to be perfect. You know, if you can, try not to give up if it feels like it's not working, because eventually something might click.
Yeah.
And you just do the best you can.
Yes.
With what you have.
So if your kid is only eating like four foods and they're like all white foods, we see you, mama. You're doing a good job.
You're fine.
You're good.
You're fine. And you will get there.
Yeah.
I feel like after saying all these things, because I know that you and I are really big on kind of like pushing the good stuff. But like, let's be clear. Our kids eat crap sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fine.
Actually, well, Claire can't. So that she will, though. Eventually she will.
Okay. Allison eats crap sometimes.
I eat crap more than sometimes. Which little side note for the pregnancy update. Remember how in the pregnancy one I was like, I'm only craving watermelon and things like that. No. Things have
when
shifted.
When she says watermelon, she means cupcakes.
Now it's cupcakes. I'm craving cupcakes and cheese and like chocolate.
I will say, guys, I feel like some of that must be a rollover from everything that you had to abstain from yeah. when you were nursing Claire, because you had a very short stint in between where you were kind of able to eat whatever you wanted mm-hmm. when you stopped nursing. So I just feel like some of that is kind of rollover from you just want what you can have.
You're probably right, but it is.
But anyway,
that's neither here nor there. But like, anyway, if your kid is if you're struggling with these things, you know, you can definitely try tips, but it could be you try everything and it's just not working, but your kid will come around.
Yeah. And I think that one thing that I struggled with earlier on is this pressure. And again, especially coming from a Russian family where like food is king, everyone is always hungry. Which is not the case. Everyone is not always hungry. There is this pressure that we feel where like they don't have one good meal and the world is falling or the sky is falling, whatever the expression is. Or, you know, they don't have one good or one meal that doesn't have a vegetable in it or whatever it is. Like if your kid's hungry, they're going to eat. You give them something that's kind of not healthier, it's okay. Mm-hmm. As long as they're happy and healthy and growing, like everything's all right.
Yes.
And I think all of these tips said, I think it's just important to remember what you're doing is all right.
Yeah. So a few resources that we will link to for sure, but there's some books that I found super helpful. One is Little Foodie by Michelle Olivier or Oliver, one of the two. And it is what I used to introduce food to Claire and how I got some of those recipes for adding a lot of spice, not a lot of spice, but adding spice to purees. Highly, highly recommend that one. Baby Food Universe by Khan El Jabouri. I'm going to butcher that. Again, it's
like names you can't pronounce.
The first one I'm pretty sure is Olivia.
It's like John Smith.
I know. But this one again starts kind of that early introduction and trying to This one's more focused on foods of the world and how you can introduce world cuisine to your baby and from the get-go.
Do you just take them to Disney World and go around
Epcot? You do, yeah.
it's the, all healthy food.
The drink around the world like no. we all did growing up. Growing up. Not growing up as adults.
We should talk about this else.
not as children. But me and Kyle did do that. It was a lot of fun. And then the last one is Hungry Monkey, a food loving father's quest to raise an adventurous eater. And so a lot of the tips that we get into, he covers off in his book. There's some great recipes, and so just some great ideas about how, you know, he was a foodie himself. I believe he was a chef. And he wanted to make sure that he raised his kids to be, similar food loving kids. And that's by, Matthew Amster Burton. Yes. An easy name. highly recommend. And then I think you were mostly online.
Yeah, I was mostly online. And I will say that, like, you know, now at this age, and once my kids really started eating kind of more whole foods and in a non-puree form, it was really more about like the same types of foods that we were eating. So it's really just augmenting the recipes maybe slightly. But I will say there was one website, which is wholesomebabyfood.com, that I used early on to just, you know, they've got some great charts about like, mm-hmm. foods that your baby's tummy is ready for at certain ages of, you know, different months. And then they also had some great recipes. And when I talk about recipes, I just mean like what fruit and vegetable go together to make something that tastes good that maybe you wouldn't have thought of. Like,
yeah.
You know, maybe it's like a squash and a banana, and I'm just making stuff up. That actually sounds really disgusting.
It does.
But, you know, just like different things that you could combine to maybe kind of give them different flavors that are not like single flavors.
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend that site. Had a ton on it, but don't be afraid to just give them what you're eating. And they're so interested in that too. They want to know why your meal looks different than their meal.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, if you really want a kid to eat something, put it on your own plate. They're going to want it more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that thing super where effective. Like one kid won't eat. And so I'm like, okay, I'll just give it to your brother. And she's like, no. Then suddenly they want it.
Just being competitive works with kids, I think.
It's really ridiculous.
You said sibling rivalry to your advantage.
It's just ridiculous. Everything's a game. All right, guys. So those are some of our tips and tricks, or at least the things that we've tried. Hopefully something resonates with you and you'll want to give that a go. If there's anything that we haven't mentioned that like really worked well for you, we'd obviously love to hear it. We're still working on it. Allison's got one in the way and she's going to, you know, every
doing
kid
it
is
all over again.
Yeah. And like every kid is different. And that's like so funny, too, because like I said, like I've got one kid who is super into trying stuff and one isn't. And
you did the same things with them.
Exactly.
So that's what goes to like you could do every single trick in the book, but your kid is still your kid.
Just goes to show you every kid is different and the things that you might try have to be different. So if you got something that's like amazing and we haven't mentioned it, definitely let us know. As always, everything we've mentioned can be found at our show notes at crunchycocktailhour.com. The delicious drink recipe can be found on Allison's blog, silverlinedandwine.com, as well as our Pinterest. And of course, if you like what you hear, definitely subscribe. As we mentioned, we'll be going to an every other week schedule. So that'll be a great way for the episodes to just come to you as soon as they're ready. You won't have to look for anything. And if you've got 2 minutes in your day, leave us a review. Let us know what you think. It's certainly appreciated. And the reviews make our show pop up for new listeners and help people find us. So very much appreciated. We will see you guys 2 Fridays from now and have an amazing weekend.
Bye, everyone.